tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello there, Strain fans! Welcome back to the Strain After Show here on AfterBuzz TV, talking about the Strain Season 2, Episode 11. What was it called?
Dead End.
An apt name for an apt show. We are streaming to you live from our brand new studio. We just moved to a brand new state-of-the-art facility, and we're going to be pumping out even more shows. It sounded like you said, check out these dicks. And I was ready to start laughing, but I am a professional. I am Matt Lieberman. Joining me, as always, Zach Wilson is here.
Hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Jackie Borowski is here.
Holla, holla for a dollar.
Stephen Lemieux not feeling so hot today. He's going to be joining us on the next episode. Only two episodes left for the end of the season. I'm getting just giddy at the thought of it. It's a strange place on an AfterBuzz show. Like, Jackie, we've been doing even longer than Zach. Like, how long have you been doing AfterBuzz?
Since it started.
So, like, what, 4 years?
5 years.
5 years? And I've been doing it, like, maybe three and a half, 4 years-ish. Holy God, I have never wanted a show to end so badly.
What about Under the Dome?
Under the Dome, I at least enjoyed making fun of. This is a pain to get through, because Under the Dome revealed its crumminess pretty early, and this show just has so much potential to be good, and it just isn't every week. This week, I freely admit, better than most episodes.
Yes, for sure.
Here's the problem I have, though. We, our friend Hank, who writes reviews for The Strain.
He writes for The TV Fanatic, and he's fantastic.
Yes, he reviews a lot of the same shows that we do. He sent us a link to a great review on IO9 of The Strain, where the woman was basically saying, you put in a sexual assault episode to make something happen. That should not have to happen.
Because you should have things happening normally.
Right. When I watched this episode, I was like nail biting, and I'm like, we shouldn't do what Game of Thrones does, which put in sexual assault as like a plot device to make things happen.
Sexual assault is not like cumin. It's not like spice that you can just add to something to make it come together.
No.
It should be a good dish without the cumin.
Well, but do you guys think that, is it out of character for I-Course? I didn't get a chance to read the article.
Oh.
But
yeah, it basically was saying there's no movement in any of the storylines this season.
They're basically at the very same place they were
in episode three.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
I agree with that. What I'm saying is, like, to calling out the sexual assault plot line in
I would say that it was out of character for him. We established that he has some sexual hang-ups and hang-ups about women from the flashback this week, which, you know, kind of explained as we were going what was up here, but it's still decades after the fact, and this is how he chooses to exercise those issues. Confusing.
I actually love the way that The Strain had, up until this point, made their vampire characters completely non-sexualized.
Mm-hmm.
Completely non-sexualized.
Yeah.
And so it was very weird to me that this episode was so sexually charged, especially when she points out, you lost your penis however long ago, and he's like, oh, I still have blah, blah, blah. And you're like, but I-Course was never like that before.
And not in the books.
And not in the books either. There's no weird vampire sex stuff happening.
Right. The thing about it, and I guess we're jumping into it pretty early, but the thing about this whole sequence that bothered me is, I understand the need and the temptation to torture her, to taunt her, make her afraid, raise the adrenaline levels in her blood so that she tastes extra tasty, maybe feeding her foods that make her taste extra tasty.
I got that too.
Like everything yeah. for me worked until he made her take off her pants yes. and spread her legs.
Yep.
Yeah, and then he was going to stick his tongue.
He was going to stick his vampire stinger up against her privates, which would have killed her. It would have been over. It would have been over. Maybe he could have rubbed it against it and tried not to keep all of his worms inside of him. I'm not making a euphemism, I swear. But it didn't make sense with the character we had been presented with. And if he really was feeling so tortured about what he did to his one true love, the one person who had ever been kind to him, if he was really like that, then maybe it should have been some perverse, like, human doll, we're going to play house crap, instead of, I'm going to mouth rape you.
Well, see, that's the interesting, because I didn't look at it as he was, like, fawning over his lost love.
He picked Dutch, I thought, because she reminded him of her.
Yes, but I think he wanted to torture her again
for still plaguing for having caused him pain at all.
Yeah, I think it was I don't think it human to me. It didn't humanize him in the end. Like there was the flashback sort of started to humanize him for a moment, and then it was this. What he was in the end of it is like the worst of all people, and like we know that he was, but this just made it deeper in that he wanted this woman who was supporting him, like trying like make him like help him, like make him build him up, like you're not bad like those people, you're good.
Mm-hmm. He's a vampire Nazi. I mean, I'm not really sure how much worse he could be.
Yeah, but in this he I think he dressed Dutch up to look like her so that he could basically kill her again.
I mean,
like torture her in a way he never did because she hurt him. Like she rejected him. Yes, for things that are terrible, and she was fully 100% justified. But because she rejected him, he wasn't the one who tortured her. I think he's built it up in his mind over these years that he in retrospect wished he was the one who hung her. Yeah, maybe not at that moment, because he did have that, like, pain.
It definitely affected him. He was shocked. That was not what he expected.
No.
He just wasn't going to sacrifice his position. That's how I read it.
No, that was in that moment, but, I'm bringing it all to this because, like, I think because the idea that he just wanted to be close to his lost love doesn't read to me as real at all.
Oh, no, not at all.
And so I'm finding a way in my mind to make it...
I understand.
Deeper.
I understand. It was never going to be all sweetness and nice, and he was never going to treat her any way but horribly because he's a monster. He's not a person anymore.
Yeah.
He is a creature that happens to have all of the memories and pain that this man, Thomas Eichhorst, had. Let's be clear. This mm-hmm. is not Thomas Eichhorst.
Yeah, just like Stroy Kelly is not Kelly.
Exactly. But at the same time, to sexualize it, to me, feels exploitative in a way that felt unnecessary and that maybe would have held more weight if there was more going on with the show and it didn't feel like it was grasping at straws trying to maintain our interest.
Yeah, it felt very gimmicky. It felt very gimmicky to say, yeah. Okay... We feel like it's not enough that Dutch is scared of him. We have to, I mean, scared of him from, like, killing her. We have to make it scared on, like, several levels.
Right.
It's like, we already get that she's scared. Anybody would be scared. They're in a torture room being told they're being seasoned for dinner.
Just death is enough.
Yeah.
It didn't need to be.
And I mean, I actually, one of the elements that I actually really liked in this episode was the very Guillermo del Toro element where you go down the hallways and they seem non-ending and there are bricks in the walls. Yeah. I mean, to me, that already set the level of terror. And that was one of the most interesting visual elements to me that, okay, I actually thought about it. I was like, he must climb the walls to get into the room, into the this level of the room every night because there's literally no way out.
Yeah. No, here's what I will say. Although I disagree with the writer's choice to go sexual on this episode had immediately higher stakes than the entire Battle of Red Hook episode, where everything was supposed to be on the line. It, in fact, I would say had more stakes than any episode so far this season. And at least that was something to a viewer that feels exhausted watching plot lines go nowhere.
Yes.
She was in immediate danger. We were afraid for her. We were horrified for her at what she was about to have to endure. Excited for her when she started to get away. Terrified and horrified once again when it appeared that there was no way out, and wanted Efnor and Fett to come and get her and save her in a way that, like, I wish I had felt when it was Zach and Nora in the church up against Kelly and the creepy crawly kids.
And not hoping that they're going to get Zach so that we would drive a storyline forward.
Right, something like that. Or, like, you know, we know that ultimately probably everyone's going to be okay. Like, none of our main cast is going to die. It was really shocking when Sean Astin's character was killed.
Yes.
And it was horrifying. It was like, oh my God, anyone could go at any time. Not the truth. It's whenever there is a death of someone we know, it's always cheap. It's always somebody like poor Roger Cross, poor Fitzwilliam.
Yeah, somebody that we're like excited to have because, like, what are you going to bring new?
Yeah.
And then, oh, you're just going to.
Right. Let's kill Fitzwilliam. Let's kill Vaughn. Let's kill the people we like or seem like they're going to bring something fresh to this show.
I even think, I mean, it's sad to me that we have characters that are like Gus and Angel de la Plata, who I think are actually very interesting characters. They just haven't done anything. Literally have not done anything
and
in the past couple of episodes.
We will get to them. And we're going to talk about all of this episode. And we're going to talk about things that we did enjoy. And we're going to get into the reasoning behind why we're disappointed by certain things. Don't you worry. We are not just bashing on a show blindly. I feel like we've raised a lot of intelligent points over the past few weeks. And we will continue to do so. But first, we need to talk about a new show that is coming to ABC this Sunday at 10/9 Central. It is called Quantico. Now, what is Quantico? It is the season premiere, Sunday, September 27th. It's the season premiere of ABC's highly anticipated new drama, Quantico. Quantico is where the FBI trains their top recruits. Over 100,000 young people apply and only 1,200 get in. They are the smartest, strongest, and have the best skills. Now they must live and train together under one roof. But everything changes when a massive terrorist attack strikes America. And the FBI discovers its greatest fear, that one of their top Quantico recruits is a terrorist. Which one is behind it all and became a traitor? It's an edge-of-your-seat drama with twist after twist after twist. Priyanka Chopra stars in one of television's top new shows of the fall. Do not miss the series premiere of Quantico Sunday, September 27th. That is this Sunday at 10/9 Central on ABC. And it's a big deal that this show's coming out with Priyanka Chopra, who's a huge star in India, to have her be the lead of this new show. Very exciting new drama for ABC. I, for one, will be tuning in.
Yeah.
All right. Zach?
I do want to give a shout out to the channel because this made me laugh. Ghost 8386. Like, oh, Germans with their weird sex fetishes.
Yeah, I would laugh harder if it wasn't legitimately sexual assault. Let's discuss, get a little deeper into this flashback, because I really did enjoy it. And it made me realize how much I'd been missing the flashbacks,
yes,
which we have not had, I would say, for the past, like, six episodes, maybe even one or two more. We had flashbacks, like, maybe up through episode 5. And this
we
is episode 11.
We did get a lot of them this season.
Not as
but
many
not
as last
recently,
year.
Recently.
Last year we had a flashback every single week for, like, the first 10. In a row.
Really?
Yeah.
I do love the flashbacks. They've been the highlight of the season by far.
Yeah. Because the flashbacks, every time we flash back, it's another key scene that advances Satrakian's growth as a vampire hunter. It is a story that goes somewhere. It doesn't feel like we're back to square one at the end of every episode, which is not how this show is designed. That would be a procedural. This is not a procedural.
Also, after having read the books, we have, I mean, Quinlan has such a rich backstory, and they haven't even touched on it yet. You could have tons of flashbacks. The guy's lived for hundreds and thousands of years.
Yeah. But I really did enjoy it. Really, it humanized him in a way that I didn't expect. And yeah, you still see him do something terrible. Mm-hmm. And he still 100% is an indefensibly terrible person. But to see him make that horrible choice to retain his position and his respect at the expense of the one person who ever believed in him, mm-hmm. And then have to pay for it, is kind of harrowing to watch. And it was great to see him perform that. It's wonderful. Okay, let's talk about briefly F, Nora, and Fett, who are tracking Dutch and trying to save her. Great teamwork between these folks.
Good job, guys.
Yeah, what is there to say? It's like, here's my biggest issue with this episode, with the season at large, is we spend so much time reliving beats that we've already seen on the show without advancing story. For example, Fett knows a whole lot about the city.
Yep.
He's going to tell us where to go. He's going to have some idea of how to get there through tunnels. More tunnels that we're going to get through. You know,
F cracks wise jokes. And the thing is, these actors are playing it so well, and it's so hard when you're an actor and you look at the material, and I'm not saying that these actors don't believe in it, but sometimes you get stuff and you're like, really? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to do that? I'm doing that again? And these guys they're selling their hearts out for stuff that is not easy to sell.
Right. It's like, we're going back to Cream again? We're going, why do we care about this guy? Why does he matter?
What's interesting is Cream in the books, I mean, I don't want to give away spoilers, but Cream has an interesting role in the books, and they've only given him like three words to say, so you don't know anything about him.
No. Gus, he already kissed a pretty Gupta waitress. He kissed her. We know that he loves her and that he has a choice to make. Quinlan told him in his last appearance 2 episodes ago that he's gonna have to abandon her in order to fight and ultimately save her. We don't need another bonding scene. We don't need a sex scene. We have already established all of this. At the beginning of the episode, have him taking the Guptas out past the border and telling Angel take care of them. And then at the last second, Angel comes with him, and we spend the rest of the episode with him, Angel, and Quinlan figuring out what their next step is going to be. It's just, we are always winding up at status quo, and it got old real quick. It really did. And maybe you're setting us up for the most amazing 2 episodes of television that we have ever seen. It won't make up for all of the boring ass waiting that we had to do. It is not how you build a show, and it's not how you retain fans.
This is, I mean, I feel like this is they're having a Sleepy Hollow season 2 problem where you just have way too many episodes for the actual like material and plot that you thought about. So what they have in the books, it's really, the books are, they're not that long. They really could conceivably fit into a season. They're interesting, but they're compact and they're cut and dry.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a book like that, it's not, they're not Game of Thrones. They don't have this like very complicated world building. The world is already built. Now we move on with the things. And there's a big plot point in book 2, a big plot point in book 3. So I don't understand why they wanted to stretch it to 5 seasons. It doesn't make any
sense. Money, 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 money. Money.
I have to think that there is... The only reason that I think that they wanted to do it, this story for season 2 is that wherever we're going to end season 2 is going to be something game-changing.
Fair enough.
And that's usually what you want to do at the end of a season. You want a moment that is going to shift the show where you've still got, like, theoretically most of the same characters, mm-hmm. but doing their show is doing something totally different. That's what good shows do between seasons, is you change the game so that it doesn't feel the same as the season before.
But here's the thing. A good show doesn't have to wait until the end of the season to drop something game-changing. A good show drops it when the show needs it. And I hate when people talk about Breaking Bad because it as great as that show is, it's over-discussed in TV criticism because it's so good and because it's so recent. But that show, when they needed to change something up, they did it immediately.
They just kept doing
it. They never wasted time. You look at the first season of that show where Walter, in episode 6, I believe, or 7 of an 8-episode first season, he shaves his head and he turns violent. He gets his money back from Tuco.
Yeah.
Like, right away. And the show is something different already.
I forget, like, when I've gone back and watched parts of that show, like, I was surprised at, like, even in retrospect, mm-hmm. I'd already seen it, how fast it moved. That's the difference with The Strain, is that, like, why I brought that up, I think that they are going to end the season with something huge, but the problem was that huge thing was too early in the story, and it wasn't 13 hours. Like, here's the thing. This season of The Strain could have been one movie.
Yes.
You could have accomplished everything that we've seen in this season of The Strain
in an hour and a half.
In an hour and a half, 2-hour movie.
2 hours, 20 minutes. Yeah.
And that's the problem right there, is that for a TV show, it needs to be something where there is a clear story every week. And the game should change on a lower level, on a character level. And then when I say the game changes for the show, the world shifts. Vampires are outside of Manhattan all of a sudden. That's season 3. That's a game changer. But the characters need to have big changes. Nora needs to turn on F, where they're, like, against each other.
Because
Zach becomes the master. Something where we don't go back to them being friendly. It needs to completely shift who, like, what they're doing, and we need to know why.
Yeah.
Nothing has changed for these characters.
Yeah.
But I think that by the end of the season, it will, and I think that they must have a big, big plan for season 3 already, because they knew they were going to have it. But they're not. The problem is, they may not have the audience to go for it.
No. I know for a fact I will not be watching it. I don't care how many people tweet me and tell me that the show's better. I'm not going to watch it. Because I can't possibly be made to care enough to waste 13 hours of my life waiting to see if the show got any better. If you're basing a series on 3 novels, and you're right, you know, you've got something game changing that's going to change everything. You burn through that plot at the pace that you need it to tell an interesting story. And when you're in the most interesting version of the show, when things are at their darkest and you have the most opportunity to build more story, because we've gotten to know these characters so well and you can play with those character dynamics, you can find ways to extend things or to change things. The best thing they could have done, honestly, as good as the books are supposed to be, is step away from the books. Use them as a rough outline. You know ultimately where you're going, but based on the show that you're making and the actors that you have and the television model that you have, tell the most interesting story you can. Never hold back.
Oh, the books are a very rough outline at this point, and what's sad is that they literally are scrambling to fill in the outline. And that's the problem they have. It's like they didn't actually put compelling stories in the holes. They just said, oh, well, I guess we'll have to hit this beat now, and I guess we'll have to hit that beat now. I don't think anybody's interested in the whole battle for Red Hook side plot line where they're cleaning up the town.
Not really. Do I care about a 1% parcel tax on the rich? No. No, I don't.
I mean, I think we
I'll watch Show Me a Hero. That's a much better show.
We watch this show to watch people fighting vampires. The Battle of Red Hook was such it was blue balls.
It was boring.
You got to, you had this big speech and all these big things, and the fighting ended in 2.5 seconds because they turned the lights on. That was it.
Yeah.
That was it.
That was it.
With science, mm-hmm. they turned it on that she is not trained in.
Eichhorst should have been killed like 5 times by now.
Yeah, again, like he got hit with a silver grenade again.
To the face. Anyone else, any other vampire, dust by now. Jesus, he has been shot in the leg so many times. It's just really frustrating seeing what could be a good show and writers who have done other great stuff being this lazy. I never want to rip a show apart. I never want to have to. But this is just sad. And then you've got this Satrakian-Rudyard plotline, which we have been waiting for these two to meet again since Rudyard was introduced. I want to say 6 episodes, the last flashback that we got.
Yeah, Rudyard Kipling. Not Rudyard Kipling, but...
Rudyard Funescu.
When he's introduced in this episode, I just don't buy his motivations here. He wants money, is what we're given, which is such a flat thing. This is a man who saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
Who, like... Granted, like, okay, I'll give you that he didn't remember him. I'll grant them that, like, piece.
But I'm sorry, but when you were in the basement running from vampires, you're not going to remember the guy who saved your life?
I mean, it's been a lot of years. What I'm saying is I'm willing to give them that.
Okay.
But what I'm not willing to give them is that once he knows that this is the man who saved his life, that he's not willing to help him in any way. It's not like... he wasn't willing to pay him anything.
Well, anything.
That was the other thing, is Satrakian offers him money. He's like, whatever offer you have, I'll make it bigger. And I'm like, this guy is an idiot. And obviously they're playing the character as a complete idiot. But I'm like, wouldn't you just consider that if money is your goal? Wouldn't you say, well, maybe I should try for more money?
Yeah.
I just don't understand.
And then to quote the Mother Superior... When trying to say that this is a bad idea, Mother Superior would have wanted you to give it to somebody who clearly is using it for some kind of higher purpose. Mother Superior doesn't give a crap about you getting $1 million.
And I mean, I guess I feel now that the book is in Cream's hands, because Satrakian had already reached out to Cream, whether or not Cream double crosses him or whatever, I still feel like, okay, there were no stakes. We really just ended up in a place where he can just walk over there and still get the book.
Right. We're supposed to be excited because we finally are getting a look at the book. We should have gotten a look at the book four or five weeks ago.
Last week.
Last week! So we're exactly where we were last week, except Satrakian, instead of being locked up in an apartment, is just back where he was again! It's the same thing! It's the same thing every week! It's bullcrap! It is absolute bullcrap!
It's the worst MacGuffin ever, because it's the MacGuffin that is so easy to get. You're like, Satrakian could just walk over there and get that.
And now Cream is gonna just give it to Satrakian because Cream is...
because Cream is working with him!
You could have had Cream and Satrakian in Cream's office, handed to Satrakian, so at least next week we can start with him reading the freaking book!
Also, that would have been a cool scene.
Yes!
Yeah, like, he walks in and Cream's like, let me look at that book. All right, here you go. And he just hands it to Satrakian.
Yeah, and freaking Satrakian walks in on that pimp cane and is just like, what up, Rudyard, you idiot? Jesus!
I would have paid you. Now I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it from you.
The other thing I don't buy is Cream as a gangster. The guy's like 5'2" and weighs 100 pounds wet.
Well, okay. Let me be clear. That actor played a very fearsome gangster on The Wire. So he can be a gangster.
And when we met him earlier in the season, like, I buy it. Like, he carries himself well. Maybe in this episode he didn't have a lot to play with.
I guess I'm just... I'm biased from reading the books and having looked at the comics. Cream is huge. He's huge. He's like The Rock. And so when you see him played by a skinny, small guy, you're like, but Cream is huge. He's like The Rock. So it's just very confusing.
The one thing I'll say that maybe they're trying for with Rudyard. They mention that the book is cursed. I don't know what kind of mystical elements the show is going to have outside of the vampires, because it's been very scientific in their in its approach. It's sort of, it's one of the things that I loved about The Strain
season one,
and like just in general, the show is this biological scientific approach to vampires is fascinating and unique. We haven't seen that anywhere else.
Yeah, we haven't seen that in 9 episodes either.
And they're not doing any of this. The science stuff was cool.
Was really cool, and in fact, it was the hook of your show.
But if it is cursed in some way, if there's a mystical thing going on, could it have driven Rudyard crazy? And that is
why he's
behaving like an idiot.
I certainly hope so.
It seems like he's just spent the last 40 years huffing paint fumes in a closet. Legitimately.
Silver paint fumes.
Okay, granted.
Silver Candy says someone needs a Xanax.
If you would like to send me Xanax, you can go to our P.O. box. Do we have a P.O. box? I wish we did.
Not for drugs. Don't send drugs through the mail.
What I want to know, though, is what's happening with the Master? Because isn't the Master...
Yeah, where is...
Does he have some kind of plan that's supposed to be launched out of these freaking Freedom Centers?
I mean, we have this whole Master versus... not Gus. Master versus...
Quinlan
thing going on that we haven't even touched on. And it seems like... Wouldn't that be a huge plot line that you want to deal with?
You'd think so.
What about the Ancients? What are the Ancients doing?
Where are... Stephen Louise is here. Where are the Ancients?
Yeah, where are the Ancients? Are they just still in the same underground tunnel? Tons of underground tunnels?
I thought they were trying to get Gus and Quinlan to amass some sort of, like, army, but we haven't seen any of that, which would be cool.
Would be very cool.
We haven't seen any of the Master, which...
Yeah.
It's the basic plot line of this show is you have one guy trying to destroy the world.
And even Angel, who we, like, want to be this, like I guess that's, like, the start of that. We want him to be, like, yeah, he's going to fight the good fight, but, like...
We know that's going to happen!
But, like, also, why? Like, he, as far as we can tell, is... a film actor who fought fake vampires in a bunch of Mexican horror movies.
He doesn't seem to want to fight anybody.
What does being an actor who fought vampires now give him the skills to fight real ones? If the twist was that he secretly was a real vampire hunter.
He was a wrestler.
Awesome. Yeah, but that was like 30 years ago.
And you have to get past a stinger tongue to grapple someone.
And he's got a bad ankle. So he's already slowing them down.
This is another one of the things where in the books he manages to be impressive as a wrestler even with the bum ankle. So here it's like they're not really building.
Here,
that.
Just real quick, because we're running low on time. Here, make your points out.
I was just gonna say, like, the way Gus introduces him to the weird lady driver, Quinlan's driver. She's like, who's this? He's the Silver Angel. As if that should mean something.
Yeah.
His name's Silver, so vampires fear him.
Sure.
She was just like, get in the car.
Yeah.
One of my favorite moments in this whole episode was when Gus had to take a picture of the family leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So what did I call it? Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, why were they taking an apocalypse selfie?
Yeah,
that was... Because it's the last time they're ever going to be in their restaurant.
Gus, can you please take our family evacuation photo? That's what I wrote.
Pretty much. Look, there's a show called Justified. It's another FX show. A great FX show. Season 2 of Justified is a great example of story construction. And they follow this pattern almost every season, where they do have game-changing reveals. They have 3 arcs to the show. The first, like, 5 episodes is one arc that it tells the first leg of a story. Then you have a major shift in character dynamics and power dynamics that sets off a new chain reaction of events that fuels the next four episodes. And then at the end of those four episodes, big twist that changes everything and sets us off into the final four episodes. It's like a movie which has three acts, a three-act structure. There wasn't one here. It was, if there were three acts, it was two episodes, nine episodes, two episodes. How dare you? Look, can we just do predictions, please?
Yes.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
Somebody says we should sick Matt on the writers.
Bring it! If you want to do that thing that happens at Fantastic Fest, where the director, where Uwe Boll fought critics, and one of them wants to literally fight me, I'm curious. I'm interested. I'll say I'm cautiously interested.
Will you use your tongue?
I will totally use tongue. I'll totally use tongue. Zach,
to verbally tear them down.
Yes. Any predictions, Zach?
I think in the next two episodes, we're going to get a ramp up of action. I don't know that it will necessarily drive us forward in a huge way, but I think we're going to get a ramp up of action where Quinlan is going to be teaming up with Gus and Angel and his driver lady. And then I hope that then somehow gets them teamed up with like F and Nora and Fett, and we can just do a full assault on the Master. But I predict that effort will fail, and whatever the Master's plan will just go into effect anyway.
Fair enough. Jackie, anything you want to say? I know you read the books.
No, I don't really have a prediction aside from whatever happened to that biological plot line where...
Thank you.
They found a cure.
No, because Jackie, it belongs to like that company now.
Yeah, it's tied up in legal proceedings.
Legal proceedings, it's gonna matter.
What if
just gonna go take my apocalypse.
What if that company comes in as just say, Deus Ex Machina, the company comes in and like drops a bomb of their virus.
Cool! Do it! My prediction is one or both of the next two episodes is going to be very good, but will not make the past nine episodes worth it. And I will not be able to sleep because I'll just be having angry dreams for a long time.
Do you think we're going to get more of the cocoa?
No. Zach, where can the people find you?
Not even engaging. Guys, you can find me on Twitter at ThatZachWilson, ThatZachWilson, and a whole bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz. We did the Doctor Who After Show earlier tonight, Dominion, which has been outstanding.
Amazing.
Jackie
Amazing.
And me reviewed this week's episode earlier tonight. A bunch of others, The Muppets we started. So funny. So fun. And that's it. Hope to see you guys there.
I'm 123jackieb.com, my website, and I want to thank Adam Fink for donating to my AIDS Walk campaign.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah.
If other people want to donate, the link is on my Twitter.
All right. Thank you, Adam.
I really appreciate
please,
it.
Folks, go to Jackie's Twitter. That's Jackie spelled J-A-C-Q-U-E, so that's 123-J-A-C-Q-U-E-B on Twitter, okay?
It's underscore B.
Underscore B.
I couldn't get my own name.
Yeah, it's okay. Folks, you can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman. YouTube.com/MattLieberman. Launching a couple of podcasts by the end of the year off of my YouTube channel. Make a big announcement on my channel Sunday. So check that out if you're interested. And popping in from time to time on Doctor Who. Thank you all so much. See you next week. Bye-bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Bye me later! The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.